Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
He's round the goalkeeper, he's done it! Absolutely incredible!
He launched himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Does it tame and tame and tame again?
Crank up the music! Charge your glass! This nation is going to dance all night!
Jude Bellingham's one step ahead of the England news cycle, the most ludicrous use of combined age of all time, Nigel Pearson and the gaffer threshold, a suitably literal analysis of is this a library, a Stonewall penalty that just shouldn't be a penalty, Tim Sherwood witnesses an own goal for the first time in his life, Gary Neville on Beyonce, Andy Gray's entire body of work finally captured in all its glory, and Richard Keys on, well, absolutely everything. Brought to your ears by Goalhanger Podcasts, this is Football Clichés. Hello everyone and welcome to Football Clichés. I'm Adam Hurry, this is the Adjudication Panel, and first of all is David Walker. How are things?
Things are good.
Excellent, glad to hear it. Alongside you for this one is Nick Miller. How are things for you?
That was nice, I enjoyed that. Yes, very well. Pleasure to see you both.
Yeah, good to have you. Tremendous Adjudication Panel, the sting in the tail that you might expect. Let's kick things off with this. This is Jude Bellingham, the wisest old head in all of international football.
Another player who's come into the side today with a lot of expectation on him, Kobbie Mainoo. Just how good is he?
Yeah, he was good tonight. It was good. It's difficult. I'm speaking like the old head here, but I know how hard it can be when there's a clamour and people put a lot of pressure on you. So,
Dave, the first ever England international to acknowledge the clamour as a thing. I'm convinced of this.
Just further evidence of Jude Bellingham's class, isn't it?
Yeah.
What a man. It's superb. I love it.
I mean, Nick, no, there's a constant, he spoke well, I thought, discourse running through football. Jude Bellingham has blown this apart. I'm actually in awe of him every time I hear him speak. And this isn't just I can't believe he's only 20 kind of way. He has all bases covered when it comes to interviews. He's completely in charge of it. And I find that massively impressive.
Do you think that he would be the best, like, current top-level footballer who could do a genuinely really good Mesut Haaland?
Yes! And, what a really good shout.
And he would have the benefit of being the first person to, I think the first person to ever do it, who has actually played with one of the people referenced in the title.
Indeed.
Yeah, for sure.
I've really liked a chat with Jude Bellingham for a long time. Moving on, Nick, what would you say is the classic deployment of a combined age in football? Like, where is it most useful to combine players' ages and to emphasise something?
It's got to be two central defenders that are in their kind of mid to late 30s.
Because that's the only thing you can really get out of it. It's like combined experience, right?
It's got to be towards late 30s, I think, isn't it? Mm. It doesn't sound that impressive. A combined age of 68 or something. No, that doesn't sound right.
68 is not enough.
I think you're on the right line, Seb. I maybe expand it to like a unusually old back four and maybe even chuck in a goalkeeper as well, just for added emphasis. Because if you've got five mid to late 30s, you could creep up above 150, can you?
Yeah. I mean, I guess the peril there, once you go beyond the two centre-backs, you're forcing people to do the arithmetic, Nick, which is, always a problem. But this blows the whole concept out of the water. It came from Josh McLaughlin and Guardian headline of the Tory party to lose almost 1,000 years of Commons experience when MPs quit. That's mad. That's absolutely mad. 1,000 years. That doesn't work. It just doesn't work. When you're going essentially to another era of human history, I don't think that should be allowed.
One of these guys remembers William the Conqueror. Is the football-y parallel more like combined number of games played? The equivalent might be if Man City sold a bunch of senior players, you could say they've lost this summer, they've lost a combined X number of games played or something like that. It still sounds pretty absurd, but not quite as absurd as 1,000 years of
It is utterly absurd.
Combined caps, probably.
Yeah, you hear that a lot, definitely. Dave, this one is for you, actually. This came from Club Hein. Troy Deeney was on punditry duty for Watt versus Leeds on Friday night, and Deeney referred to co-pundit Nigel Pearson on Sky, on the couch, as the gaffer. Club Hein says Pearson managed Watford for 22 games. Deeney had six more permanent gaffers before retiring. Is this ongoing usage merited? Is there a minimum number of games to qualify? Maybe it is just once you've managed a player, that's it. That's the bond is set.
Although I suppose the natural question would be, would any of Deeney's Forest Green charges refer to him as gaffer?
Possibly not. Possibly not.
Is it like a US president's thing? You're always referred to as Mr. President.
It's like a Liz Truss effect. That's it. Well, I've done it now. So you can't. Maybe Pearson, though, Dave, in his defence, is an immediately gafferable man, whether he's managed you or not. It felt like you'd just be obliged to call him gaffer straight away.
Yeah, he definitely still embodies that authority about him still. And I think, I mean, there'd definitely be managers that Deeney had for Watford who very publicly he didn't like and probably wouldn't call gaffer. Walter Mazzari,
who's the least like, yes,
being one of them. Probably,
do you think you wouldn't welcome him as gaffer if you met him in the street?
I think he'd probably call him Mr. Mazzari, sort of slightly passive aggressively, I think.
Big Walter.
What about like Hayden Mullins, who was like caretaker, and is probably not dissimilar age to Troy Deeney, maybe a bit older.
Might call him gaffer, ironically, wouldn't he?
It has happened, though, where the manager has been younger than some of the players he's managed. Mm. Is he the gaffer? Can you call someone who's younger than you the gaffer?
It's a good question. It is a bit weird, isn't it?
I think it would be okay, but yeah, it would make everyone feel very awkward. Everyone concerned. So yeah. But yeah, I can see how that happened. I think Nigel Pearson's overwhelming gafferness probably took over there.
Do you think that outside of the Watford bubble, this is still a thing? Because I think maybe because there's so many, maybe they just all get lumped in as Deeney's kind of used to it all. He's got so many gaffers that he just calls them all gaffer, maybe.
Wait, you mean the use of gaffer at all?
No, not at all. But like, okay, for a similarly short spell at a different club.
Oh, it's a different perspective, you're saying. Yeah. Like, in Watford world, you know. That's a good stint, maybe.
Are you sort of suggesting that Troy Deeney might have forgotten his name, and he's kind of he's had so many managers that he's just forgotten his name, and he's kind of
that's what I really hope is the explanation.
Vaguely aware that you've managed me at some point, so I'm just going to go with gaffer.
I imagine they probably had quite a good connection as well, but yeah, I really hope that's the explanation.
They did have a connection. They had a good time together, I think.
Good. Right, it's a triumphant return now for My Sins Corner. We haven't had one for a while. This came from Scott. He says, there's a For My Sins in this interview with British black metal legend Danny Filth from Cradle of Filth. Here he is being asked about his first ever gig. Mouths at the ready for the phrase For My Sins, which we often hear in popular culture and we're about to hear again. Here we go.
Yeah, I was shitting myself. It was at a place called the Albion Mills, which is a pub in the town which I live in England, which is called Ipswich. I still live there.
For My Sins?
For My Sins.
Yes!
I haven't found the train station, that's why. The pub is
Dave Walker there. Stealing in there, the old magic. I think time away from For My Sins Corner's done you good, it seems.
Yeah, I felt fresh there.
Got the hunger back.
Yeah.
Tremendous work. I thought that was a fairly standard one, Nick. Where was the doubt in your mind?
Oh, no, there was no. It wasn't about doubt. It was just beaten by a better man on the day. I was there. I was a little bit behind him, but...
Bit of mind games there in the clip, which I believe had Czech subtitles. I thought, which one of you is going to be able to delve into your linguistic knowledge and be able to pluck that out of the air before he says it? But neither of you got that one. Well, anyway, great work. Next up, bit of Easter weekend.
magic for you. Came from, first of all, came from Baby I Was Born Chiran. Excellent work. Bit FPL, but fine. He reports of York fans chanting, "Is this a library?" at home to the travelling Chesterfield fans. Obviously unacceptable, he says, Nick.
Yes, although is there a sort of caveat here, is if it's a group of the loud section trying to rouse their fellow home fans?
Oh, okay.
If it was them taunting the away fans, then obviously unacceptable, but...
I didn't think of it as a motivational tool, Dave. I thought it was pure ridicule. Okay, maybe it would work like that, actually.
I mean, has that ever happened?
Oh, come on, lads, where's the talking? That's this, yeah, essentially the chant equivalent of that, isn't it?
Yeah, but you wouldn't ever sing, is this a library, to try and provoke that response. You wouldn't say, is this a library? It's too famously...
You're wallowing in your own quietness if you do that, aren't you? Yeah.
Yeah. I've never heard, "Is this a library?" directed at your own fans. And if it is directed at the away fans, it's... What would be the correct thing to sing to a quiet group of away fans?
"We forgot that you were here." Is that not more away fans to home fans? Because you've got that kind of power dynamic that emphasises the joke of what you're saying. There's only a few of us and we forgot that you lot, 80% of the ground, were here. Or can it be both ways?
I think I've heard it both ways. Okay. Yeah. And there's also, "You only sing when you're winning," which is, I haven't heard in a very long time, but that's another one.
Yeah, it's funny how these things sort of come in and out, actually.
You should be chanting, "It's not a library. Come on, lads, it's not a library. Speak up. Come on, sing."
Over-engineering this, I fear. Following on from that, Matt Del Monte tweeted on Good Friday, "I went to watch Colwyn Bay versus Aberystwyth today, and the Aberystwyth fans started singing, 'Is this a library? Is this a library?' in a dismissive manner. Well, Terrace Wags, if this particular ground were an actual public library, it would have been closed today, as it's a bank holiday." lovely little response to that.
And also, it is in danger of being closed due to increasing government cuts.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Big fan of sort of real literal takes on football chants. That is the one little guilty pleasure I have on this podcast, and I'm proud to roll it out once more. Now, semi-serious chat to follow on from that. Football seemed divided on Saturday, Dave, about the penalty given to Newcastle against West Ham, when Calvin Phillips wound up to boot the ball downfield. Anthony Gordon got himself in the way and got booted instead. And a lot of people saying, "Never a big, you can't give that, you can't give that." And then I would say an equal number of people saying, "Well, he's kicked him, it's a penalty." So I think it's an incredibly precise example of a very specific phenomenon, which is a stonewall penalty that really shouldn't be one. I feel like it's something that's very clear cut, but you could probably legislate against it and say, do you know what, in these very specific situations, we shouldn't be giving penalties. I think it'd be quite an easy one for IFAB to figure out. There's no loopholes here. If this specific thing happens, it should be okay.
It's one of those where I think, even if I hadn't seen it, I think I would have known what you were talking about from the description, because it's like one of those where he has obviously kicked the player, but the player's kind of nipped his foot in as he's winding up to kick the ball. You could describe it as clever, I suppose, from Anthony Gordon, but you feel sorry for Calvin Phillips, because he has not intended to foul him, doesn't even know he's there, but nevertheless the act of a defending player's foot full on kicking the attacker's foot is hard for any referee or VAR to not give it, right?
That's the best thing about it. I mean, Nick, it is essentially just kicking another player really, really hard, which should be a penalty. And it's just really unlucky. And people will say it's unlucky and therefore shouldn't be a penalty, but it's kind of tough. Like, if you're in that situation, I feel like a footballer should probably realise there's probably someone who's going to be sneaking up behind you doing that exact thing. If I was playing Sunday League, I reckon I would anticipate that.
It's also, I don't think this was quite the case in this one, but it's also exacerbated when the fouler kicks the bottom of the foulee's foot and really hurts his foot. He's then going down and quite feasibly broken a bone in his foot, and that he still committed the foul, sort of.
Yeah, it really is a penalty, but I think spiritually it shouldn't be. I think like it's against the spirit of being fouled, but it is a massive foul. And it's a completely unique situation, I think, in football, but it's very discreet. I don't think there's any sort of subtle variants of it. I think IFAB could sort of get round a table next year, Dave, and say, do you know what, in those situations where a defender's about to clear the ball and someone just gets in the way and gets booted, I don't think that should be a penalty. And I think everyone will go, yeah, fair enough, if you can police it, go for it.
I think you'd then get into the territory where they'd have to be looking at whether or not the player clearing the ball had looked around. Did they know that the player was there?
Did he scan?
Like a driving test or something. Have you checked your blind spot? If you didn't check your blind spot, then...
Yeah. It would come down to, Nick, really, if there were any sort of VAR sort of situations here, it would come down to, did the kicking motion begin before the attacking player got into these sort of peripheral vision? So then it would come down to them sort of moving the tape back and forward to see whether his leg began to swing. So there are potential dangers, but I'm all for it. I think it's a penalty, and I think it should remain a penalty, but I can see why people are utterly disgusted by it and think it's just a sort of football adjacent foul, and I'm all right with that too.
If you had given that penalty away at Sunday League, what would be your reaction? Because I've kind of got something in my head that I could see you doing.
It would be sort of aggressive resignation. It's like, oh, for
yeah.
I honestly, and you know, whilst I don't want to ignore the fact that in game mode you're going to react a lot differently to these sorts of situations, I'm convinced that I would just go, oh yeah, fair enough. I know exactly what's happening. I'm very annoyed. But yeah, it'd be more luck than judgment, I think, that you'd be annoyed about. Right, interesting. Good chat. We've solved it. Right, now the other day, Nick, we had the superb spectacle of John McGinn being sent off, I think it was against Spurs, while the crowd were singing his name. And people pointing out that they'd never heard this before, and it was just a wonderful collision. And this might be the next level. This is Anthony Gordon receiving his second yellow card against West Ham on Saturday, just as this happened.
Are you ready for the player of the match? Well, can we do it now?
Yeah, it's changed three times, my player of the match. But
there's the second yellow.
Now has to be Anthony Gordon. I think he's dragged his team from the depth of a bad loss to what it looks like.
There's the red.
To be a win, a spectacular win.
There's the graphic on the telly of him being player of the match.
He's the player that chased the lost cause. He's been involved in most things that Newcastle have done well. In the week where he made his full debut for England last Saturday against Brazil and then came on against Belgium, he's going to be... Well, he's going to be coming off here. He's been shown a second yellow card. He's now being sent off. Well, I suppose that just puts a cocked hat on it. One second you're giving him the player of the match and the next second he's getting sent off.
Yeah, sorry, Anthony.
My question here, Dave, is, was it like a double sort of standing ovation, or was it like 50% for him being man of the match and 50% for him being sent off because they didn't know which was what was happening? I'm very confused about what I'm hearing there.
I love how Fletch just, he must have seen. How is he not looking? Like the second yellow gets given so long before...
He's got someone in his ear telling him, definitely.
He finishes his kind of summary of his excellent performance. But it all works out quite well. I love the cadence of that and how the crowd plays into it and everything. And you're right, yeah, I think it's not the sort of applause that you get for a player who's been sent off deservedly, but it's a defiant applause from the fans, as in, like, we're applauding you anyway because we're on your side and we choosing to disagree with the referee, regardless of whether he deserves it or not. It sounds more like the applause you get when you've been substituted in the 90th minute after a great performance.
Yeah, maybe they didn't spot it either. But yeah, what are the chances, Nick? One in a million.
If you were just watching the game, like looking out onto the pitch, I don't think there's any way you couldn't see that. But I suspect it's one of those situations where the commentators are actually commentating looking at the monitor more often than you think at these games. And this is kind of one of those situations.
They've switched off. They're talking about man of the match. They're in that mode.
They're talking about man of the match. And they're also, the camera is very focused on Gordon rather That's than true. The kind of wider pitch. But I don't quite know why they didn't spot something was awry when Gordon's kind of threw up his arms and going, what? Sent off. Yeah.
I like Lucy Ward feeling the need to apologise to Anthony Gordon as he was walking off.
Is that commentator's curse? I don't think it
is. I think so, no.
Because, I mean, if anything, I mean, it depends what happened first. I think he kicked the ball away just before he was nominated man of the match, which means, if anything, it's not a commentator's curse at all. So don't claim credit for it, if anything. Right. Moving on. Nick, what is your adverb of choice when a player turns the ball into their own net?
Well, I usually think of it as like the unfortunate player X turns it into their own net. I'm not sure.
Inadvertently?
Yeah, inadvertently.
Yeah, sort of inadvertently turning the ball into... So, and sort of an element there of kind of occupational hazard. Like, they tried to do something else and they've turned it into their own net. This was Issa Kabore's own goal for Luton to equalise for Spurs late on at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. And the Premier League tweeted out like this: Brennan Johnson was introduced at the break and he's straight into the action as his low cross is mistakenly turned in by Luton's Issa Kabore. I've never heard mistakenly for an own goal before. Oh shit, I thought that was our goal. Oh, no!
It was quite a weird own goal, because it wasn't like a sort of glancing, you know, slice to finish thing. If you put me kind of in a situation like where I didn't know any of the context, then you could probably convince me that he was scoring in the correct goal, because of the action of how he played it.
Interesting that you say that. It was quite an unusual own goal, Dave, as exemplified by Tim Sherwood on Soccer Saturday.
I have no idea why he's not tried to just clear this ball away. He's just kicked it into his own net. It's ridiculous. I can't understand why he's done that.
It's like someone who's never seen football before. He's kicked into his own net. He easily had to do that.
It is. It's like someone's parent who doesn't watch football. He's not supposed to do that, is he? Isn't he supposed to go the other way?
It would take a lot in football, Dave, for a seasoned pundit to simply say the words, kick it into the net. And I think this is one of those examples where there's nothing better to say.
Yeah.
It really is. It kind of showcases how ridiculous the own goal was by just saying, yeah, kicked it into his own net. Mad.
And there's something about Sherwood and his delivery, I think, which it sort of makes sense. It kind of weirdly works here.
I really like him on Soccer Saturday. I think he's, there's no point in him ever being a football manager again. Just do this. I think he's great at it.
There was another great bit of Sherwood in the same match when he was describing Tottenham's winner. So Son scored the winner. There was a deflection on the shot which led to the goal, and he described the goalkeeper, he said it's hopeless goalkeeping. And then he went on to say, but yeah, it's the deflection, he doesn't have any chance of getting it. He was saying the goalkeeper had no hope, had no chance of getting it, but called it hopeless goalkeeping, which made it sound like he was saying it was a mistake.
You gotta be careful with your words.
Like a sort of more existential version of hopeless.
Yeah
Lovely stuff. Right, time for footballers' names in things. A little double whammy for you here. This first one came from Chris Donald, and I ask you, which former Barnsley, Reading and CSK Sofia midfielder appears halfway through Season 1, Episode 7 of Fresh Meat?
Falling leaves in the garden of Dave.
What were you shut up about, Dave?
Oh, Brian?
Howard? How are you?
I think the first ever 1-2 footballers' names and things we've ever had. Are you having this?
It would be just so good if that was the intention. That whoever has written this and named those characters had back engineered it to the point just to get that name of relatively obscure footballer in.
Must be a big CSK Sofia fan on the script writing team there. Right, part two comes from Simon Cardi. He says the season 3 finale of crime drama The Mentalist reveals a shocking name on its list of murder suspects. I know this player was considered to have a killer pass in his locker, but this is taking it one step further.
Who are the suspects?
Brenda Shetrick, CBI Media Relations. Assistant DA Osvaldo Ardiles.
You can't call him Osvaldo Ardiles. Come on. Pathetic. At least they didn't go with Aussie, Nick.
Well, this is the thing. If there's like, I don't know, if people check this to make sure that the script writers aren't trying to insert private jokes into their scripts, but if they did, then they'd probably get away with it because they would just come up with an Aussie idea. They wouldn't be, exactly. You know, they wouldn't know who Osvaldo was.
This is deliberate, Dave. 100% has to be.
I mean, surely, yeah. But you never know, I suppose. It's American. There's enough plausible distance, maybe, that they could just, you know, there could be, is there like a name generator or something out there that people use sometimes just to give them a random name for something if they need one? I don't
know.
Should
be. It shouldn't, yeah, as we've discussed before in this podcast, it shouldn't be down to personal whims and sort of in-jokes. It should be completely random, like Happy Hunting Grounds. That's how it should be done. Right, final item for part one. This came from Oliver Bailey, who was listening to Liverpool versus Brighton on 5 Live. Leon Osman on CoComs.
Just lost that ability to break forward at the moment, Brighton. They haven't been able to string that first pass together if they win the ball back.
Dave, can you string one pass together?
No.
Especially not if you're Brighton. Or maybe Brighton are more capable of doing it.
Well, I mean, I suppose how long is a piece of string? But it doesn't really work, does it? No.
It's like a string of sausages, isn't it, Nick?
Is this in the realms of that the thing where people say when their team was so bad, they say, well, we were lucky to get nil in that one.
Yeah.
Is it, they're like an extension of that, maybe?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a genuine belief that you can string one pass. I sympathise. I do sympathise. But you need to have at least two passes. Is even two passes enough, actually? You can't string... Okay, yeah, because that's what they say. So they haven't been able to string two passes together. Is two passes a string? I think you need three.
I don't know. It depends how you're defining string. I mean, because you could put a bit of string between two things.
You could.
That's a string, isn't it?
No question. No question. I'm just, you know, in the spirit of football, is two enough for a string? You're still giving the ball away after the second one. Anyway, one to ponder in the break. We'll be back very shortly. Oh, look at that! That is wonderful! Welcome back to Football Clichés. Let's kick things off for the second half with this from Matthew. This is from Jeff Shreves' brand new podcast, Football, Music and Me. Gary Neville, the first guest. This is him talking about Beyonce.
And yeah. And we've just seen Beyonce's just released a country western track.
I saw that the other day, the video for it and the music. It was brilliant.
Texas Hold'em.
Absolutely brilliant.
I think it's amazing.
But just something, I actually think that Beyonce, and look, I can't call myself a Beyonce fan. I couldn't name three songs. But there are some artists that are that good that they can transcend across all the sort of different, if you like, demographic of people and attract to them. And she's got that. She's a world class.
Mm. Hot on the heels of Sting saying Sam Fender could go all the way. Gary Neville saying Beyonce's world class.
Genuinely world class would have been the next step.
Does it work for music? Does it work for kind of musicians? Have you heard it before?
Well, I think it does. I think for like the absolute elite, you could play any stadium in any country in the world and you'd sell it out. She's at that level. Your Beyonce is your Taylor Swift.
But world class then feels quite insufficient for that level of stardom. World class just means, you know, can do it at the highest level, but isn't the absolute ultimate elite. Doesn't do Beyonce justice is what I'm saying, okay. Nick.
Well, I would dispute also, surely you can't be a sort of a human being with a vague awareness of culture and you can't name three Beyonce songs, surely.
Oh, I don't know.
No?
Go on, well, you do it then.
Well, all right. Crazy in
Love. You've got to get the titles exactly right. Come on.
I can't believe I've been goaded into this. Crazy in Love. Texas Hold'em. Yep. Is it Texas Hold'em?
Yeah. Oh, is it? Or is it the one I've just heard? Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Piss off. No, I'm not playing.
Cheating at it. For a start. Madness. Oh, dear. Having to resort to her latest single as one of your three is pathetic behaviour. Can't even string together three Beyonce songs.
I'm looking forward to your appearance on this podcast, Adam. Surely Jeff's going to return the favour, right?
Maybe that's what he meant on his phone call afterwards, saying, if there's anything you need. Yep, I'd love to appear on Football, Music and Me, please. Should be good. Looking forward to it. Right, fascinating question next from Fred Gruff. Stick with me on this one. Jude Bellingham scored late to bring England level with Belgium, and there was a clamour of last kick of the game references. It got me thinking, has anyone ever scored with the first kick of the game? Technically possible, I suppose. Yes, we've seen it quite a lot, haven't we? But what really got me going was, has anyone ever scored with the middle kick of the game? I suppose the probability is high, but how would we ever know? We could have goals scored around the half-time break and commentators telling us that he scored that with what might prove to be the middle kick of the game. Nick, do you reckon it's ever happened?
Yeah.
Opta could definitely find this out.
They 100% they could find this out. And if they say they can't find it out, then they're lying.
I'm desperate to know, Dave, if a goal has ever been scored in a middle kick game. I mean, as Fred theorises, he thinks it would happen around half-time. I don't reckon it would. I reckon it would probably be sort of around 55 minutes. You'd expect more kicks of the ball in the second half, right? A bit more desperation. Or would you? More long balls, so that means less kicks. I don't know.
As we've discussed before, the action often slows down immediately before halftime, so the volume of kicks might go down a bit just before halftime. But then, yeah, like there could be a fast start to the second half, so it could the ratio.
Maybe it all evens itself out in the end. So maybe it is around halftime after all. But imagine a commentator going crazy for it, Nick. He scored with the median kick of the game.
But you're not going to know at the time of it being scored until afterwards.
No. You'd have to go back and redo the commentary. Yeah. Put it in the match reports afterwards. Great colour piece. Athletic would do it.
It'd be one of those things where you kind of find someone who scored the middle kick of the game and you think, oh, this would be a good piece. I'll ring them up. And you ring them up and they would care not a single bit.
Not one jot.
Were you aware that this was right in the middle of the game?
Not even one of the lads in the dressing room told me. We can definitely find this out. We can definitely find this out. I will get stats man Duncan Alexander on the case. He will find this out for us. I'm convinced it's doable. And how many kicks of the ball are there in a game? If you think of it as passes plus shots plus clearances, are there any others? Headers? Headers don't count as kicks, so we wouldn't have that. It would be useful to not have headers, Dave, because that would get the numbers down and make it easier to calculate.
Yeah. It's similar to what we were saying about kicks the ball into his own net. It's such a sort of route one kind of stat. Like, do Opta even count the kicks? Is there counter for every game?
They break them down, so yeah.
But can they just... I suppose they could tally it all up easily enough. Yeah.
They count touches, don't they? Do they separate like a headed clearance from a kicked clearance?
I think that, well, they would. They would definitely record it as such. But they might come under the umbrella of clearances. This is such a boring chat. But regardless, I will find this out. It must have happened. I reckon at least this season, let alone in the last 10 years or so, or since Opta started recording the data.
Come off the hour. Come off the middle kick.
What an honour. What if he's only one player? Who do you reckon is the most likely player to have scored with the middle kick of the game? That's not going to happen.
Jermaine Defoe. I don't know.
Yeah, fair enough. Right. Next one comes from Max Chater. He says, I went to a trade show last week and this was on the website of one of the exhibitors. Our suppliers have invested in the best equipment. It's one of the highest standards. The Rolls Royce of the maple syrup world. I was getting bored of Rolls Royces, but this has blown it wide open again. Rolls Royce of maple syrup. I can kind of see it, Nick, because it's gloopy. You want it to be luxurious maple syrup, and you want it to be high quality. You want it to be of good provenance as well. So Rolls Royce kind of works.
How do you make one maple syrup more Rolls Royce-y than the other? Is it just about the elegance of the gloop? I don't know.
The smoothness, I think, is what you don't want it to. You don't want it to be coming out too fast. You want it to take its time.
Not too runny.
I don't want to be seen as shilling for pure maple, but what they say is it's produced in Quebec, crucially. Maple syrup is part of Canadian heritage, and over many generations, skills and techniques for the production of maple syrup have been mastered, resulting in the finest maple syrup in the world. So that's where you get it. The Rolls Royce of maple syrup comes from Quebec, unsurprisingly. Really, Canadian aces. Right, penultimate question for the adjudication panel comes from Will Hardy, Dave. He says, Happy Easter. Is Xabi Alonso the first/best example of which member of the squad will end up as the manager actually working out? Because this is normally done retrospectively, isn't it? You know, he always came across as he was a deep thinker. He thought about the game quite a lot. I had the feeling he was destined to become a manager. But Xabi Alonso really does fit the bill here.
Yes. I think maybe usurping almost namesake Xavi from Barcelona, Xavi.
He's too short, that's why.
Even though he's won the league, he hasn't sort of, no one's talking about him as being like the next big thing, are they? But like, I think I can remember people saying that about him as well. But Alonso, but is it a flavour of the month thing? Are we just saying that because he's doing really well at the moment?
No, not at all. Not at all. You can totally see, Nick, how colleagues of his might have been asked at the time, you know, 05, 06, which member of your squad do you think is going to go on to be a manager? I think he would have been right up there. And not because he was some sort of Jobsworth, not because he was like a Neville-style kind of union man. It's just a slight sort of upstanding football aesthete about him.
The cerebralness, the kind of the type of player he was. He kind of obviously played under a lot of great managers as well. The other one I thought of was Brian Robson, who was like I know he didn't have an enormously long and illustrious managerial career, but he was the one that, like, in that United team kind of the late 80s, early 90s, they always said that he would be a manager, and then Mark Hughes was the one that no one said there was going to be a manager.
I guess being nicknamed Captain Marvel really does signpost it quite well, doesn't it?
Yeah, helps.
Yeah, there's something of the born statesman about Xabi Alonso, which I suspect means he was destined him. More on him in a very short moment. The final item for today's adjudication panel comes from James Whitehouse. Very interesting question indeed. This was on the back of a video from Real Madrid highlights from the other night. And Brahim Diaz rifling a finish against the bottom of the post. And the tweet said that he'd rattled the woodwork. James Whitehouse says, can you rattle the woodwork by hitting the base of the post? Is there enough reverb? Dave, he's bang on here. It doesn't count.
He's right, I suppose, yeah.
So how high up is a rattling?
Yeah, there's probably some sort of engineers or some scientists listening, I'm sure, could tell us the optimum sort of point.
40% of the height of a post before it really starts to rattle enough. I mean, crossbars are the ultimate rattling.
I think sort of quite high. I'd say more than 40%. I would have thought sort of two-thirds of the way up.
Two-thirds of the way up. So two-thirds of 8 feet, whatever that is. Equally, you can rattle a crossbar if you hit it plumb in the middle, but if you hit it on the angle, is that rattling? Probably still is. I think that probably counts if you hit the angle of post and bar. But yeah. Completely agree. If it is fixed neatly enough into the turf, you can't rattle a woodwork by hitting the base of the post. Well done, James. Anyway, speaking of getting rattled, it's time for Keys and Grey Corner.
Ford Super Sunday.
Right, kicking off here with God's work. This came from Nozza, who's made a 1 minute, 48 second compilation of peak Andy Gray's imaginary conversations between players. Here, for me, are the absolute highlights of that compilation.
Chenela says, I've done my bit. Who wants a goal? Armstrong says, I do. Now look at McManaman's run. Thomas just glides up and says, go on, you've got younger legs than me, you go on and do it. Look at Fowler. Get off. This is mine, he says.
Hey, watch Kings come into the picture. Look, he wants it. Give me it, he says. Give me the ball. You can't have it, he says. I've spotted something.
He goes in there saying, this is mine. And no one is stopping me getting that.
Look
Look at the way he looks up, drills it at him. Go on, Nicky, put your head on that.
Now watch Torres just pick him out. He might have shot himself. He says, go on, have another go.
But this is all about Gattaniol. He wants to score himself. He chops one way, then the other, and then just says to Jonathan Johansson, here you go, son. Have yourself a little tap in. Yeah, this will be one of the easier goals you get this season.
Beckham says, no, I'm not going that side. I'm going to go to the side. Maybe you should be guarding more.
And it's there. Go on, Fernando, have another one. He takes John Terry out of the play totally and says to Crouch, go on, son, win us a Community Shield.
I mean, where do you start with this? First of all, an incredible piece of research, Nick. This, this is something that people speak about a lot. There are Facebook groups about Andy Gray's imaginary conversations. No one's ever taken the trouble of actually collating them all together. It's brilliant.
It's also surprisingly like the comforting and even slightly emotional wave of nostalgia that comes over you watching that. Vividly remember watching pretty much all of those goals live.
Seems to span about a 10-year period there, Dave, which I think might surprise a few people, you know, that he did it for so long. But what's your favourite one of that lot, would you say?
My favourite one is the one where he just sort of overreaches a tad, the Beckham free kick, yeah. Where he sort of pauses and stumbles halfway through. I'll put it the side you should have maybe been guarding. It doesn't always work. His bread and milk, as it were, is the somebody putting it on a plate for someone. Have yourself a tap in.
Yeah. And the first name basis is always good, Nick, as well. I mean, that's the sort of level of familiarity you'd hope that teammates have. So that's a level of insight that Andy Gray can offer.
That was my favourite, the have yourselves a tap in, son.
So happy that this has emerged.
I actually think my favourite one, though, was the Liverpool, when is it Michael Thomas is passing to Steve McManaman in the Liverpool one, and he says, go on, son, you've got younger legs than me.
you're really getting into the nuts and bolts of their personal interaction. Yeah, it's really, I mean, you never had the time to say all that, as well as he races off into the distance. So the longer the better. But go and win the Community Shield. Oh, it's magic. Oh, it's one of my favourite things I've heard all year. Anyway, Brian's gun's got to go to YouTube and get something now. Just to top this off, Nick, after this was tweeted on Sunday night, Richard Keys saw it, quote tweeted it with, they've never replaced him, hashtag still the best. That warmed my heart, actually, I have to say. I think that, you know, Gray deserves this time in the limelight, and it's good to see his mate sort of giving him props. But could it get better from there? Yes. In the replies to that tweet, George Galloway MP.
Oh, God.
Yeah, next up, it's at Richard Keys on socks again.
And now Madison's decided to cut holes in his socks.
Oh. Brian Johnson coming on. Who's off Werner?
I spent time with Graham Souness this past weekend when I was back in the UK. It drives him to distraction as well.
What?
The socks. Cutting of holes in socks.
I know.
What is the point?
Two great things going on here, Dave. First of all, Andy Gray just completely oblivious to what Keyes is banging on about yet again. And secondly, I don't think we've discussed this before in Keyes and Gray Corner, is when Keyesy goes for his hushed tones, when you know it's something really bad. So he sort of goes, I'm really worried about this. I think it's an absolute shock.
I don't know, there's almost a sense of resignation in his voice. He's been defeated.
What, Gray?
No, Keyes. Right. Keyes, he's just like,
could work for both.
It's still happening. I've told them, but they're still doing it.
It's like he's talking about a mate who's sort of fallen off the wagon or something like that. Keyes back on the booze.
We tried everything. We've tried sewing them back up. We've tried taking the scissors away. He still finds them. Next up, here's Keyesy on Eddie Howe.
He takes them to the next level. I've said previously there are no guarantees in football other than Jose Mourinho.
Yeah.
If you want silverware, he will win it for you.
He's
and that's
never,
what they need.
He's
desperately.
Jose's never disappointed, has he? Now, let's be fair. A club like that with a personality that Jose Mourinho in charge.
Oh, wow.
It
would set it on fire.
Just a bit.
You know, Donald Trump talks of Sleepy Joe, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Sleepy Eddie.
Yeah. Well, he's a nice lad, Eddie.
That's it. He's a lovely lad.
He is a lovely lad.
Imagine we've had to wait this long, Dave, for Keyesy to cite Donald Trump in a bee in punditry.
Although, I mean, as we've said before, I don't think they're particularly... We've got to give Keyesy some credit. I don't think he's anywhere near the sort of Donald Trump scale of things politically. But but it's just curious. I mean, plenty of things you could have a go at Eddie Howe about, but Sleepy Eddie, he's not... Is he sleepy? I suppose he is quite low energy at times.
The point of the Sleepy Joe thing is that Joe Biden's an old man who...
He's got his VP, Tindall, to do all the... He's the energetic one.
Yeah, I wouldn't say the brains behind the operation, but he's certainly the energy. Yeah, it doesn't really work, does it? But still banging the Mourinho drum and once again insisting that Mourinho guarantees silverware. He just doesn't. It's a mad thing to still be saying. Regardless of whether you're, you know, completely, you know, paid up member of the Mourinho bandwagon, it's a mad thing to still be saying and repeating week after week. But that wasn't his big issue of the weekend, Nick. His big issue was Xabi Alonso on Saturday and Sunday. Here's part one.
But at no other point in history will these jobs all be available again. Right now, he can have his pick.
He could.
At no other point in his career going forward will he ever be in this luxurious position again. Ever. He might get Madrid at a different time. And now's a good time to get Real
Madrid, by the way. Now's a great time to get Madrid.
I would question the size of his cojones.
Would you really?
Leverkusen, because Bayer Leverkusen will never again have a season like this. Bayern Munich will make sure next year they have another decade of domination in German football. Yeah. Leverkusen might pick up the odd cup here and there. But so right now his stock is as high as it will ever be, and his opportunities are as broad and as great as they will ever be, and I think he has bottled it.
Good. So that you think Leverkusen or Leicester, and he's bottled the job?
Absolutely.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting.
As is very often the case with Keezy, Nick, on these issues, there's some really, really sound logic just wrapped up in gimmickry and winding up that he just can't resist. I mean, a lot of what he says there is actually fairly arguable, but then he just completely undermines himself by just turning it into a circus.
Quite low-key, but an absolutely superb example of Gray agreeing with Keyes there when he said, it's a good time to get the rail job. It's a great time to get the rail job.
Lovely, lovely chemistry. As is always the case with Keyesy, Dave, if something he does on the Saturday broadcast lands on social media, he will roll it out once again on the Sunday as if it never, ever happened.
Never will there be a time when those jobs are available to him and he's got his choice. And never will there be a time in his life when he is coveted to the degree that he is right now, ever again. Instead of taking one of those jobs, he's decided to stay at Bayer Leverkusen.
Yeah.
And the reason I describe them as such is because they will never, ever have a season like they've had. Where does he take them from here? I think he should have had the courage to take one of the jobs that is better than his. But he's decided to sit safe. And, and that led me to question the size of his cojones yesterday.
Yeah.
Now's the time, is it? So, as Andy's always said, you can't time success.
No.
Leverkusen next year will not win the title.
Says who?
Me.
What are they?
Right. Bayern Munich. I think Bayern Munich will win it.
Absolutely rinsing the one thing he's thought of on Friday night before the weekend, going, I'm going to use this five times.
I mean, Leverkusen, it is wonderful. It's better than Eric Ten Toast, anyway, that's for sure. one thing we've not mentioned here is that there's definitely an element of Keezy being cheesed off at the fact that Xabi Alonso has completely undermined Keezy's kind of little low-key scoop that he had last week in the blog. He kind of just slipped it out in the blog last week that I'm told that Xabi Alonso is going to Liverpool.
Yeah, you're right. Keezy thought he had the Alonso scoop the other day, but having been proved wrong, this was his response.
I had conversations with a number of people that were convinced that Alonso was going to Liverpool. There was another group who got in touch to say, no, he's staying. You might be wrong there. Don't care. Uh-huh. It'll draw him out.
Draw him out! Xabi Alonso, faced with some of the biggest job offers in the world of football, looking at Keezy's blog for guidance.
Oh, I've got to make a call now. Keezy. Keezy's gone with it.
Fucking hell. He's really pushed me into a corner here.
I'm staying. Fuck it, I'm staying.
I think I'll go for BeIN Sports.
That's amazing.
Don't care. Now, this was posted on BeIN Sports socials, and it was then quickly geo-blocked, I imagine, for tedious on-pitch footage reasons. But we've got it. Here's Richard Keys on Pep Guardiola and Jack Grealish.
Save it for the dressing room. It's all for the cameras, isn't it? It's so tiresome. Go down the tunnel. Shouldn't it be on the pitch?
It sounds like Dave doing Keezy's voice.
Oh, And then he's got to go and tell everybody else what they did wrong, of course.
The lovely little sigh towards the end there.
Go down the tunnel.
Slightly disappointed he didn't include again the "who does he think he is?"
Oh dear. That's the most withering we've heard.
Yeah.
Keezy for a while.
So tiresome.
So why? There's nothing more to say.
Go down the tunnel.
Oh, great, great Keezy offering. Be In Sports social media executive, whoever you are. Thank you. Thank you for everything you've done for your services to world football this weekend. Right up there with Nozza's Andy Gray compilation for me. Tremendous work. Thanks to you, Nick Miller.
Thank you.
Thanks to you, Dave Walker.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll be back on Thursday. See you then.